For too many of us, it's become safer to retreat into our own bubbles, whether in our neighborhoods or on college campuses or places of worship, or especially our social media feeds. Surrounded by people who look like us and share the same political outlook and never challenge our assumptions. And increasingly, we become so secure in our bubbles that we start accepting only information, whether it's true or not, that fits our opinions, instead of basing our opinions on the evidence that is out there. In the course of a healthy debate, we prioritize different goals and the different means of reaching them. But without some common baseline of facts, without a willingness to admit new information and concede that your opponent might be making a fair point, if you're tired of arguing with strangers on the internet, try talking with one of them in real life.
It'll be too easy to talk about nothing, to talk about nothing. Be too easy to talk like I'm something. I'm balling, I'm stunting. Be too easy, chasing the fame, playing the game. It'll be too easy. But tell them we don't feel that. No, no, tell them we don't feel that.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. I am your host, Calvin Moore, and as always, I am here with my co-host, Kent Strait. What's up, Kent?
Hey, Calvin. Not as always. I mean, I'm not here all the time.
It's like, just a thing I say. It like, doesn't have to be true.
Like, for instance, I missed last week's show, and last week's show was really something special.
Everybody, as it turns out, everybody missed last week's show.
Really?
Except for the people that were on it.
What happened?
So here's the deal. Okay, so Kent and I, we do this show here every single week, for the most part, at Podcast Detroit in Royal Oak, Michigan. And we kind of got a sweetheart deal and know the owners, and they're really good people. And we're just one of many shows that record out of here. Well, one of the things that we talked about and negotiated when we were talking about pricing and everything was every show that comes out of here gets a sound engineer, so that when you have your show, you can just show up, you know, pop open a can of beer or pop and just kind of sit down at the mics and go for it, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that happens because you have a sound engineer who takes care of all the sound stuff, right? You don't have to worry about levels or any of that. Well, when we first started talking about this, Kent was like, well, I used to work at a radio station, so I kind of know how to do this already, so just show me how your system works, and I'll take care of it. I was like, okay, cool, great. So Kent couldn't be here last
week. 10 months into this, I did not know that conversation led to axing the sound engineer.
Yeah.
I had no idea
that
other shows got one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Every show has one. So anyway, I kind of know how to run the board, but Kent pretty much does the board every single week.
Yeah.
And so last week he couldn't be here, and we had a fantastic conversation about gentrification, had a fantastic panel. None of the panelists had ever been on the show before, so that was kind of something different, because normally we have like repeat guests. So sit down at the board, get everything going. We have a fantastic conversation. Middle of the podcast, I get a text from my wife saying, hey, I can't hear you guys.
Oh, I got that same text, by the way.
Right. Yeah, she told me later.
But I always do, because I figure, oh, you know what? The last time I got that text from Jen, it was during the break.
The break, right.
So I figure, oh, so I didn't even look at the clock. I figure, oh, you know what? They're on break.
Yeah. So so I get this text saying, hey, I can't hear you. And I'm just thinking, so Kent thinks, hey, I always get that text. We're on break. I'm doing what a terrible husband always does. I ignored it and just assumed my wife was wrong, right? She must have done something wrong.
Oh,
she clicked the wrong button or whatever. So anyway, we get to the end of the show, and I turn everything off. And when you turn everything off, it goes to a recording of an old show or just to some music. That's how the network is set up. And my wife said, hey, at 6:57, which is when the show ended, I finally heard something. And I'm like, I was like, that's weird. 6:57.
Well, God bless her for keeping it on dead air. Who knows how long.
So at 6:57, that's when it dawned on me. I was like, oh no, did I do something wrong? And
oh,
so I asked David Phillips to send me the file. He goes, looks like this file here is empty. He's like, don't worry, we got a redundancy. He looks at the redundant file, he's like, yep, that one's empty too. So apparently we had a fantastic conversation and I neglected to hit record. So for 2 hours, and here's the thing, the microphones work during that time, and so I'm thinking everything's fine, everything's good, and we didn't record at all. So last week was episode 18. This week is episode 18 as well.
So, I mean, I know it was like a 2 hour conversation.
Oh, by the way, Kelly's here.
Oh, yeah, Kelly's here. Kelly's here. Yeah. I will explain why in a few minutes.
Hey, everyone.
Other than the fact that she's just awesome, we love having her here.
Yes.
Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. We missed you.
Oh, I miss you guys, too.
Oh, that's great.
I need more time. If I hit more hours in the day, then I'd just always show up, and you'd have to kick me out.
True story. Probably would. So yeah. let's just keep the 24-hour period the way that it is, right?
any chance you want to give us, like, a five-second recap or something on your wonderful conversation? Because I was newly interested, but apparently I'm not going to be able to go listen to it.
Yeah, so it's a fantastic conversation that none of you will be able to hear. No, so I let all the people that were on that episode know, hey, my bad, didn't record. It was fantastic conversation. But at the end of that episode, we had agreed we need to revisit this conversation. We need to revisit it soon. Sure. So we're going to revisit it pretty much the exact same conversation. Yeah, slash do it over. I think your microphone's not on, by the way.
Hi, I'm Kent.
There's Kent.
And this is especially embarrassing because we established that I know how to run the board.
Yeah, he's the expert.
And turn mics on.
It turns his mic off.
I was today actually muting the microphone because I am product placement eating Reese's Snacks Mix.
How is that? Is it
good? There's peanuts in it.
Oh.
So I didn't want to crunch.
See, it's crunchy. And we just discussed, I think, before we hit record that all of our snacks in the studio are crunchy, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, you're eating Cheetos Crunchy. Now, here's the thing about Cheetos
Crunchy. I'm not eating them anymore. They're just sitting here.
Here's the thing about Cheetos Crunchy. Are there soft? There are soft Cheetos, aren't
there? Air puffed Cheetos.
The air puffed Cheetos.
However,
so crunchy,
if you eat those on the air,
still crunchy, right?
Softer.
Yeah,
but
you'd have to sit and suck on it for a minute and let it just kind of melt in your mouth, which not everybody wants to do that.
Nah.
What are we talking about?
Gentrification.
We're talking about gentrification. I haven't even had alcohol yet. That's great. So, we had a great conversation about gentrification. We had Aaron Foley from the mayor's office. He is the chief storyteller for the city of Detroit. He's also my trivia host, our trivia host, Kent.
He's the
chief storyteller. It is a brand new position. It pays a lot of money. A lot of money.
What a sweet gig. I mean, does he tell stories?
He tells the stories of people in the neighborhoods. Because most of the stories...
He tells the stories to who?
I guess he tells it to the public in a way.
Does he go around on a wagon with a guitar, like a minstrel?
I'm pretty sure it's the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like that. And sometimes they have a problem with rats, and he'll show up with a flute, and he'll lead them all out of the town.
Lead them all out, yeah.
Right, and then they won't pay him, and then he'll come back and lead all their children out.
Fair enough.
It's very much like that. No, so that's a Pied Piper reference if you didn't
get
which fairy tale I was talking about, people. But no, I guess the position is kind of... there's a lot of development going on in the downtown area, and of course the mayor shows up at things like that, and those are the great photo ops. But you don't often hear about the stories of the people out in the neighborhoods of Detroit, and so it's his job to kind of put those stories out there on behalf of the city of Detroit. Brand new position. We'll see if it sticks around if the current mayor does not win re-election, which I think it's pretty much a lock that he's going to win. But anyway...
I was actually going to bring that up as we got into the meat of the episode. But, I mean, this isn't one of the stories that I've got for today. But as I was doing research for the show today, it occurred to me that it is, May 25th, 4th?
I don't know. May 24th.
Yes. It's Memorial Day week.
Yes.
And the mayoral election is in November, presumably November, I don't know, 6th, 7th, whatever it is. I haven't heard the name of another candidate.
Coleman Young Jr.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. It's that guy. Yep.
Coleman Young Jr.
There are a few lesser-known candidates.
But those are the two front runners and the only two that will be left in November.
Okay.
Where were we? What was I talking about? I've lost track.
Gentrification episode.
We had Aaron Foley on. We had Lauren Hood on, who works with Live 6 Detroit, which... dives headlong into these gentrification issues all the time on a day-to-day basis. We had on a couple other people that were fantastic as well. But anyway, It was a good episode. It didn't record. We're planning on getting everybody back for that particular episode. But this week's kind of interesting because we were supposed to have a discussion on pacifism, and it's the second time that we've tried to do an episode on pacifism, and nobody has bitten on. We sent out an email saying, "Hey, what topics would you like to be on? Here are the topics that we have set up for the year," and this one didn't get anybody who said, "Yeah, I'm interested in that conversation." And so I think we're just going to scrap the pacifism conversation. What did you call it, Kent? You said it's like a...
Oh, it's a... Yeah, sure. What did I say? I mean, it's like doing an episode on pacifism is like doing an episode on basketball in Munchkinland.
In Munchkinland, right.
It's just... It's something we can't wrap our minds around. That's not how the world is. I mean, I get that basketball is a thing. Or rather... I go for mouth. Okay, you know.
The basketball's a thing.
But
wait, does that count as a musical reference? Because Munchkin Land is a Wizard of Oz, and that was a musical.
Show is young.
Okay, there you go.
But sure, yeah. It's fine. I would love to talk about pacifism for 15 minutes.
Okay,
yeah, mm-hmm. But
understood.
You know.
I mean, at some point this will happen. Maybe just further.
Worked for Gandhi, right?
It did
until that moment when it spectacularly didn't.
Right, but okay. No, it worked for him all the way through.
Yeah, but then he got shot.
As did the bullet. But,
okay.
But it worked for Martin Luther King Jr. Their movements, it worked for their movements. Their lives, their point of view didn't work for someone else who killed them.
Right.
But they were consistent all the way through. Either way, so we were supposed to talk about that, and that didn't happen. And then we were going to try to do a different episode that we're doing next week today, and nobody was available today that had said, yes, they'd do it next week. So we're still going to do an episode, which we'll talk about at the end of this episode, next week on the topic we were planning to. So this week, I said, well, why don't we just kind of do a hodgepodge episode? We haven't done one of these in a while. I think episode 5 of season 1, we did an episode called What Happens When We Have No Panelists. but as I was thinking about this today, when I'm coming out of a week of doing finals for my master's degree program for this semester, got one more to do after this episode, but also moving into a new house, painting, pulling out. Today we spent the day pulling out copper piping to put in new bath fixtures. So just so much stuff has caught up where I wasn't able to keep up with getting people on the show and all that jazz. So I think maybe it would, and I said this to Kent, why don't we just do an episode where it's just the three of us and we just kind of talk about what's going on in the world? And that's the good thing about doing this kind of episode as well, is because we schedule everything out, most things aren't timely. Occasionally they are. Like when we did our episode on Muslim in America, the Muslim ban had taken place. We talked about Women in Transition 2017 Part 1. The Women's March on Washington had just taken place. So those were timely. Everything else tends to be, these are things that people are talking about. And then something happens in the news and we're not really commenting on that because we had something planned. Like at the time of this recording, a bombing has just happened in Manchester, the United Kingdom, at an Ariana Grande concert, and she has canceled her tour through June 5th.
June 5th,
I think,
yeah.
Like a week and a half, 2 weeks, something like that. So, but we wouldn't have a full episode on that because this week we're going to be talking about pacifism, or next week we're going to be talking about X thing. So it's kind of good that we're taking a break. And so we're going to take some time to look at, I guess, national politics, maybe things that are going on locally, and then maybe some lighthearted entertainment-related stuff as well, depending on what everybody brings to the table. So I asked everybody to bring 3 stories, and we will see how much traction we get out of each person's story for a while.
Right.
So that's what we're going to do. So, Kent, why don't you go first?
Well, you said to bring a national story and a local story, and then I forget what the third story was because I didn't read the text that
something
carefully.
Entertainment related. I have an idea as to what your entertainment related one would be.
We'll see because I don't know yet.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure
when you find it on the internet, it will be the biggest thing for you. But and that's why I didn't pick it.
I'll be looking. Okay.
All right.
this is a local story.
Okay.
And I pulled this from the Detroit News.
Okay.
Fine paper, a little right for me. But okay. Fine paper, on guard for 110. No, that's Free Press. But Detroit News reported today that the a state of the art excuse me, a state-of-the-art maintenance hangar at Metro Airport in Romulus. Well, for any of you out of state listeners, Romulus is southwest of the city of Detroit, and that's where our major international airport is.
It is also the sworn enemy of the Vulcan Empire.
It is.
Yes,
it is.
That's where the Romulans are from.
That is planet Romulus.
Where they cloned Picard. Remember that?
They did. Shinzon.
Yeah.
Played by a younger, thinner Tom Hardy.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. That's so great that you know that.
It is. Was that the... No, that was not the worst Star Trek movie.
Oh, no. Gosh. The one where God needed a planet.
Yep, five.
Yeah,
God starship. Needed a starship.
Starship. What does God need? What does a God need with a starship?
Anyway, a state-of-the-art maintenance hangar opened at Metro Airport. For Spirit Airlines. Now, it should give you a clue, the fact that I find it difficult to say the word Spirit Airlines with straight face. But the question immediately comes to mind for me, and it's much in the vein of, what does God need with a starship? What does Spirit Airlines need with a maintenance hangar? Brief story.
Okay.
The last time I flew Spirit, which is both a time in the past and a statement on the future, because it was the last time I flew Spirit. I was going on a work trip to beautiful downtown Atlanta, Georgia, this past November.
Okay.
And
by the way, Spirit is the Greyhound of airlines.
There's only one.
It feels like you're on a Greyhound bus.
It does.
It does.
It does. I was on an American flight once, but it was like one of these operated by Americans. So it was like American Eagle. And I was coming back from New York, and it occurred to me as I got on this plane that there were 9 rows on it. There were 9 rows on this American Eagle plane, and it had propellers.
That would scare the crap out of me. Were there like chickens and goats? That's kind of like the thing that comes to
Indiana
mind.
Indiana Jones was not there.
Okay.
But yeah, it had propellers and it had 9 rows. And I realized that as I looked, and if you've ever seen, did you ever see the show? We are all over the map on this story, but you know, it's fun. It's fun for me. Did you ever see the show Pan Am? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was heartbroken that it didn't continue.
That it didn't continue? Okay. Pan Am.
I tell you what, that show still re-downloads on my iTunes.
How many episodes do they just keep read?
No, it was like 8 episodes.
Yeah.
I subscribed to it.
Okay.
I saw one. You could download the whole first season.
Yes.
So because it's connected to my Apple ID,
yeah.
Anytime I open up a new iTunes on a new computer or something like that, it wants to re-download
sure.
those episodes.
I'm
like, no! God, it was Pan Am!
I saw the first episode, and I thought, you know, that's fun, and they're pretty, but there's so many hours in the week, and...
Right.
You know. All right. So I didn't watch anymore. And that was, of course, before I knew the force of nature that Margot Robbie would go on to be in our culture.
Yeah, I forgot she was in that.
But Pan Am, I think, conditioned me and took me back to a time before I was born when stewardesses or flight attendants were called stewardesses. And I mean, I think it's unlikely that there was ever a time when they actually all looked like that. But on this American Eagle flight with 9 rows and propellers, my flight attendant was a 340-pound man. All right, so I'm just saying.
He's a guy who would have to buy 2 seats on that same flight?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. So it was easily – it made me realize I'm basically on a Greyhound bus here. And not going that much faster. I'm trying to wind back to... Oh, yeah, Spirit. Last time I flew Spirit...
Maintenance hangar.
Last time I flew Spirit, November, went to Atlanta, Georgia. And on the way down was delayed 3.5 hours because the plane broke. And they had to bring in a new plane, empty, from some other city. And fly us down there. On the way back, I went down on a Sunday, came back on Wednesday. On the way back, delayed 4 hours for the exact same reason. Plane broke. They had to bring in an empty one from another city
right.
to complete the flight. And so it made me wonder, what does Spirit need with maintenance? They should just bring in the planes that work. But they apparently built a $36 million...
Well, maybe they'll have less planes that break.
$32 million, 132,000. I'm sure the planes are fine.
It seems like a good idea to have a maintenance hangar.
Do you know how Spirit compensated me for the 7 hours of delay on that itinerary?
Free peanuts.
No. No, it was
another
nothing.
Another free flight.
I got a $7 food voucher.
Ooh.
A $7 food voucher.
So a dollar for every hour you were...
Well, sure. Okay. A $7 food voucher. Think of how far that goes at the airport. It's a drink and fries, but anyway.
Maybe.
So basically maybe. Half off of whatever you were going to buy.
Half off of what I got at Big Boy. Big Boy in the at Metro or Atlanta. I don't remember which one.
Do they have Big Boy down there?
I don't know.
I think that's a Midwest thing.
You know what? Yes, because I had Popeyes in Atlanta.
Okay.
Popeyes. So yeah, $7 food voucher and a $25 gift certificate for future flights. Clearly, that's going to go to waste. It's a theoretical reward because I will not be using it.
Well, you could pass it on to me because when I need to go out to California next year, I will be flying Spirit.
That's the thing. I can't pass it on.
Oh.
A business partner.
Do you want to go take classes for me for 2 weeks?
A business partner of mine who's been on the show several times, yeah. Steve Phelps,
uh-huh.
He had to go on a one-day work trip to also Atlanta. He had to go on a one-day work trip to Atlanta in February, and I had this $25 gift certificate sitting there, and I thought, you know what? We'll just use that to make the trip cheaper, and I tried to do it, and they wouldn't let me do it because it wasn't my name.
I'm sorry.
Well, whatever.
I don't know what to say.
You're okay, fine.
Kelly, what's your story?
I've got... Yeah. Oh, we're moving on.
We're moving on.
Oh. Spirit sucks. I think is the...
Tell us how you feel about Spirit. We were not able to tell.
Spirit
you
sucks.
Know, I've got to say something here.
Of your new job's with wildly, Spirit, isn't it?
Okay. Of all of the wildly relevant and interesting news stories to choose from, what are you doing?
This is a 2-hour show, Kelly.
Wait for it.
This is a 2-hour show.
Okay. He's working towards it.
Okay.
Later on, you'll be like, well, God, I wish I hadn't spoken so soon. He was trying to bring levity to all the heavy shit we're talking about later.
Well, I'm just going to, we'll just dive right in since with my story.
That's what we're used to on this show, though.
So, yes. So
true. Like, this show that has Touché. No chill. That would be the Touché. Other name of this Touché. Show if we changed the
though,
name.
No, and this, I guess, I don't think I was, I don't think I was involved with the show yet when you guys tackled the police brutality conversations, correct?
Oh, I thought you were ending it with when you tackled the police. Like, well, that didn't end well. So be glad that you weren't here for that.
I think
episode.
That was before my time.
No, that was our episode one.
Yeah.
It was episode one or two. Yeah.
So, yeah, before my time.
It was episode 1247.
It was a lot of
however, anyone who watches the news at all or has Facebook will probably see that that has been a continuing issue that surfaces news channels repeatedly. And so, I would call this my national story. Is by a story that Sean King from the New York Daily wrote in response to apparently last week Donald Trump proclaimed that it was Police Week in the United States, of course, in honor of all the officers in blue. And of course, following that, there have been a lot of comments, reports, stories, coverage regarding those in law enforcement who have passed away.
I think it honors fallen police officers.
Yeah, fallen officers. Yeah, that's the right terminology. In Sean King's article, he kind of wanted to share some of the actual statistics that might be interesting related to some of those things, that there has been an increase this year as opposed to last year as far as fallen officers. However, in that increase, it's actually been a decrease in the number of officers who have been shot and killed. An increased number of law enforcement officers have died potentially while on duty, but not necessarily actually by being shot and killed by other people. So we're talking about other types of
death. So it's a sounds like a good news, bad news story.
Well,
but
any
cops are dying at an alarming rate, but it's not by gun violence. So is it like carelessness on their own part?
So actually, what Sean shares with us is that a decent percentage of officers, the majority of officers who are killed as of last year, are either killed due to suicide, a vehicular crash or accident. So not necessarily always, you know, some kind of crazy chase. It could be just a normal car accident, the same way any of the rest of us could potentially be killed. Heart attacks, which is a very small percentage. I think it looks of it last year. A hundred of the officers that were killed last year actually took their own lives. A statistic that doesn't get covered a lot. Nope. And of the 145 officers who died in a way other than suicide as of last year, 56 of those were from car crashes. 10 died of heart attacks, 4 died of 9/11 related illnesses, and 2 more drowned. So in other words, the majority of law enforcement officers who are unfortunately lost to us is not due to them being shot and killed by a criminal or someone else. And then, of course, Sean King also shares with us that statistically, white people have shot and killed more U.S. law enforcement officers than any other ethnic group.
Well, that's not hard to do. You have the largest amount of people.
Right, right.
But the narrative would be that it's probably black people killing more cops.
Right. That's an interesting statistic considering that we are being told that law enforcement officer deaths are increasing due to Black Lives Matter. So it's interesting to hear that narrative when we find that, in fact, actually the number of law enforcement officers being killed by gunshot has gone down, not up, and that the larger number of law enforcement officers who are killed by gunshot, it's not statistically more so at the hands of a black person or someone of another minority than it is of a white person. So those are just
or that it's mostly at their own hands. So
yes, well, and that's the irony too, I think, because similarly, when you want to talk about potentially like supporting our troops and supporting our officers are two really common narratives. Mm-hmm. But very rarely, at least on the conservative side of that conversation, will we want to talk about actual, like, the quality of life, mental health, what services are available to those two groups of people. And so we want to talk about supporting our officers, except when the conversation might lead to, well, how much are they getting paid? Are they getting enough time off? Is the stress too high? Are there enough benefits coming at them to, you know, make up for that stress? How many hours are they working? Is there enough people on the force to kind of, you know, split the work up evenly? Are they getting the kind of support that they need? Because all of those things, of course, cost money.
Right.
Similarly with our veterans, like after they've already served their purpose and they're not of significant use to our military services anymore. We value our troops, but, you know, should they need healthcare access, should they need counseling services, should they have PTSD, should they come home injured and have continued expenses for the rest of their lives to cover those types of things, you know, how much do we want to invest our finances into supporting those
folks? And that is something that you don't hear much about in terms of, okay, when we're talking about the deaths of police officers, and I'm glad that Sean King has put this article out there, because the assumption is, okay, you know, they're being killed at the hands of criminals. Like,
right.
Police officers are dying at an alarming rate. You know, we should be really concerned about this. Like, oh my God, criminals are just killing. We're thinking killed in the line of duty.
Right.
Like, no, you know, the vast majority of them killed themselves. And so then we need to address all the things that you just talked about. And the interesting thing is, in the first episode that we had about police brutality and community engagement way back in season one, we had a guy on by the name of Harold Love. And Harold Love is a former captain with the Michigan State Police. You know, and he's a black man as well. And so that was kind of – there was this kind of like dichotomy. Like, he's a black guy.
Right.
And he's part of this force that people are saying are against, you know, black people. And he talked about the bad apples, of course.
Right.
And the blue code of silence, and how when good cops are defending bad cops, those good cops are no longer good cops. Those are actually bad cops as well.
Right.
But – he left the police force, worked for the Downtown Detroit Partnership for a number of years, but was steady, if I'm not mistaken, steadily working on opening his own counseling practice. Oh, and now he is a person who helps to onboard new police officers by doing their psychological testing, mm-hmm. Continuing to do counseling. If an officer shoots someone, their gun is taken away from them, they're put on desk duty, and they have to go to mandatory counseling, whether they kill someone or whether they don't. Right. Mm-hmm. If you have discharged your weapon,
right.
You have to go into counseling. And so it was really interesting to see this guy who stepped out of the police force, knows the ins and outs of it, knows the good cops and the bad cops, knows when the good cops defend the bad cops because, you know, it's our fraternity, right? You know, they call it a fraternity. But he understands as a psychologist, as a psychiatrist, just psychologist, I don't think he's a psychiatrist, but he understands the issues prevalent with the police force. And it's something that is not addressed, but it is something that, based on my interactions with him, I can say there are people who do have a heart for particularly the mental health issues mm-hmm. of police officers, but it is not something that is highlighted enough in the media because it doesn't sell. It's not sexy.
No, right. Well, and I think, you know, that one of the parts of the conversation that gets missed a lot, though, knowing the caliber of the conversations we have in the studio, I'm sure it probably came up during the conversation here, but... You know, we always want to make the conversation about whether or not when we're talking about the shooting of an unarmed black person that usually ends up on the news, the conversation usually becomes, you know, some racist cop. And we don't always want to have the conversation of, well, that may or may not be true. But, you know, the reality is law enforcement, often those kinds of situations come down to what somebody does in a knee-jerk, you know, couple of second reaction, and how, you know, what are some of the, first of all, you know, the societal prejudices that somebody may have in their mind that may not have a ton to do with that person's own personal kind of outlook in life. But if that, how many hours of sleep has that person been going on for the last several days? How well have they been trained to handle high intense situations so that they know to kind of like be calm or how to react? And, you know, sometimes there's a lot of us who might do a dumb thing when only given a couple of seconds mm-hmm. to figure something out if we're not prepared for those kinds of situations, you know? And so as we're seeing those kinds of things happen more and more and more, it does kind of beg the question, like, how well are we taking care of our officers to avoid that when they're in these situations where they need to kind of react in a certain way, are they prepared for that? And are they, you know, what are we doing to make sure that, you know, they're the most equipped to handle these kind of high-intensity situations?
I think we've done an episode in the past on euthanasia-assisted suicide, but I don't think we've done an episode on just actual straight-up suicide. I'd love to do an episode that discusses this new show, 13 Reasons Why.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be doing an episode on Saba Maru's new show. She was on our Muslim in America episode, and she spun off and done her own show, which is called Unsung Heroes, and I'm the co-host on that show, which is great. Not great because I'm there, but great because Saba is amazing and she's got unbelievable friends. They really should rename the show from Unsung Heroes to Saba and Her Amazing Friends because they're just high caliber people who come in every single week. But one of the things that we haven't discussed is just the epidemic of suicide in the country as a whole.
Yeah.
And I come from a background where suicide is cowardice, and Kent, like, checked me one day where I was basically being an asshat on somebody's Facebook wall about this.
That is one of my favorite words, by the way.
But coming from an African-American community, suicide, by and large, is frowned upon. Psychological help is also frowned upon. So, you know, you have an alarming rise of African-American suicides that aren't talked about, but you also have this disdain for psychological help. And I think there's a correlation there.
Of course, sure.
But there is still kind of this overarching idea that suicide is a final solution to a temporary problem, right? And also the language has been used, cowardice. That being the case, talking about the deaths of police officers at their own hands, we have this narrative around suicide that is, we need to understand the problems, the things that drove the person to do that. But the language has shifted from when I was younger to that person. I mean, from when I was younger in the 80s, in the early 90s, that person was selfish. This person, you know, is hurting everybody they're leaving behind. Shame on them for doing that. You would see relatives who were left behind just upset and angry at that person. They can't get closure or tell them how angry they are because it was so final. And so we move into this situation where police officers are killing themselves, and no one wants to talk about the mental instability. We don't talk about the mental instability of people. And so when I look at, this is an alarming rate of police officers who are killing themselves, and then there's this narrative of police officers who are shooting people, and people have said for a long time, hey, look, there are a lot of people who are getting into the police force who are mentally unstable. And then when you give them a weapon, mm-hmm. and they go out and they have to police people and they get stressed, they do something crazy, mm-hmm. and they hurt people. And so then you've got police officers who are killing themselves, which plays directly into this mm-hmm. unstable people doing unstable right. things to other people.
Right.
And I don't want to say that, you know, I mean, I guess I am saying it. I think that people who commit suicide are unstable in some way. Otherwise, they wouldn't have committed themselves. Everything that drove them to it, I believe that those things exist, but there's still an instability enough that says, I need to end this right now. And they do it. And so with that, I think that plays into this narrative of police officers doing things to people because some sort of instability was not checked.
Right. Well, and I think you raise a good point, too, because if we're being honest, right, then we would have to say that a decent number of law enforcement officers are in a place where they would actually injure themselves, take them, you know, that then if that's the kind of culture that sometimes is existing in our law enforcement departments, that should we be that shocked that in that same culture that is turning out against other people too, you know?
But at the same time, I guess I do want to back off a little in that. I mean, what was the number of people who committed suicide versus the how many police officers there actually are in the nation?
Right. Well, so that I don't know. We only know that of the deaths for law enforcement officers, that was a decent percentage of those deaths. That's what we know. But that being said, it does seem like what you're saying makes a point because it's manifesting itself in several ways.
We might want to save this for the if we do a show on suicide, but can I say one thing?
Yeah.
I mean, because we do have a 2-hour show.
It's kind of a wild card Wednesday.
It's wild card Wednesday.
Wild card Wednesday.
Which we didn't say at the top of the show.
That's the name of this episode, everybody.
Wild card Wednesday. I would posit the idea that there are a very select number of circumstances where suicide is perfectly logical, and you could do it at the height of your mental stability. The example that comes to me, feel free to push back, is if I am inescapably terminally ill and it's about to get super painful.
Well, that's assisted suicide. We talked about that.
Well, I mean, I could do it. I mean, I could do it without. It doesn't have to be assisted.
Well, sure, but I would put that on the I would put that under the umbrella of euthanasia. You're euthanizing yourself.
Okay.
You foresee pain. So we have covered that one. But suicide is just like life is too bad. I can't deal with what's going on in this world. There's no physical pain. It's mental, emotional, that kind of thing. So I would differentiate between those two things. Some people might not. But that would be my pushback. I would differentiate. Okay. But it's my turn. We're gonna do. Do we want my local story? Or do we want my national story?
Let's go local.
Let's go local.
Because nationals, you know.
Okay. Well, local is kind of deep dive here as well. This story comes to us by way of I don't even know what news source it is. Oh, MLive.com. But I was turned onto this story by Nicole Beatty, who ran for Michigan legislature. I met her through Dr. Saba Maruf on her show, Unsung Hero. She came and spoke about her work around the issue of gun violence. And so I guess she won for Michigan. She ran for Michigan legislature. She did not win. People are already pushing her to run again at some point, whenever the next run is, I guess, 2 years, right? Either way. Gun owners could carry concealed pistols without a license under House bills. So as of yesterday, two bills went before, I guess technically five bills. One bill is four bills mashed together, and then one is its own bill. This concealed carry bill has gone before the Michigan House or the Senate. Legislation that could allow gun owners without a concealed pistol license to carry concealed firearms drew a crowd at a Tuesday House Judiciary Committee meeting. The four bill packages sponsored by Republican Representatives Michelle Hoytenga, Pamela Hornberger, Sue Aller, and Tristan Cole. the most controversial of the four, HB 4416, would lift the prohibition on concealed carry without a license for all but those who are already prohibited from carrying a firearm by state or federal law.
Let me just ask this. We have a Michigan state lawmaker named Tristan Cole.
Tristan Cole, yes.
Tristan Cole, just close your eyes and think about the guy you really don't want your daughter to date. That's his name.
He's got two names of guys you don't want her to date. Is it that Cole kid? Oh, get Cole out of here.
Tristan.
Ugh. Who names a kid Tristan? Anyway.
Went to high school with a Tristan.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Did he date someone named Isolde?
Named who?
Nothing.
No.
It's another pop culture reference. Kelly got it.
Oh, I get it. Tristan Isolde, yeah. She's already like, oh, that's cute. I like that movie.
So, essentially... what this has done, the interesting thing about this is Nicole posted this on her Facebook wall, and she said this bill will allow teenagers to get a concealed weapon, just walk around with a concealed weapon. And so I was looking around and I said, okay, I need to see the language of this bill. What is the number of the bill? So she sent me the actual bill. So I looked it over and it says 18-year-olds. And I said, well, Nicole, you said that teenagers were going to be able to have concealed weapons.
That's true.
They're 18. So technically you were correct, but I'm thinking my 14-year-old daughter. When I think my daughter's now a teen, when she turned 13, I was like, oh my God, she's no longer 12. She's not a tween anymore. She's a teen. So I'm like thinking 13 to 17 years old. Not fully formed, developed. Maybe you shouldn't have a weapon, right? My daughter is, you know, obsessed with Instagram. I don't want her to have a concealed weapon. I just don't. But she's boy crazy, emphasis on the crazy. So I don't want her to get her emotions hurt and then have a weapon. But turns out this legislation allows adults to
right.
to buy. And I asked her, I said, why did you say teenagers? Because 18-year-old, yeah, they're still a teenager. We understand there's still some development that needs to go on. I'm one of those people that thinks an 18-year-old should be able to drink if we can allow them to be drafted into the military. And yes, they are trained to carry weapons in the military and things like that. They should be able to drink. That's my personal belief on that. But I don't think of 18-year-olds as children. I think we have agreed as a culture that 18-year-olds, even though we know developmentally they have more to do, they are an adult. If they commit a crime, they're going to be charged as an adult, except for in some states where it's 19 years old, right? Mm-hmm. So for most people, it is 18 years old. You are recognized as an adult. So that's what the language of this bill says. So it's not problematic to me that teens are going to be able to have weapons. The way she made it sound on her Facebook page is like tweens were going to get it. But I do find it interesting that you're now going to be able to carry a concealed weapon in Michigan without any kind of permit to do so.
But what did she say when you said, why did you pose it that way?
Oh, she said, you know how politicking is. We speak in hyperbole.
Well, okay.
I'm like, all right, well, I guess technically you're not incorrect.
True.
But you're saying teen only because teen is in the word 18. But,
right.
But we don't think of 18-year-olds as teenagers.
No.
They are, but we think of them as adults because legally they are.
Yes.
So... but yeah, so now we've got this law where you're going to be able to carry a concealed weapon without having any type of licensing to do so in the state of Michigan, which to me is...
It's a good idea. No, not.
I mean, to some
wrong?
Degree, like I understand it. Like I have a friend of mine the other day and she posted a picture on Facebook and she had... She had her shirt lifted up a little bit, and you saw her concealed weapon in her stomach area. Mm-hmm. And my thought is, I've been to your neighborhood. That's smart. That's smart for you to have a concealed weapon. I've seen clothing that's made for women, especially, that makes very flat lines. You can't see anything, but they've got a gun pouch on. So should they get approached or be in a bad area or a bad situation... they've got a weapon immediately available. So in that sense, I'm like, okay, I get it. But then I'm thinking also like the suburban soccer mom. I don't know why I don't think the suburban soccer mom should have a gun on her, but I'm thinking, okay, out in the suburbs, things are safe. of course this is ridiculous. This is, it's crazy. So I'm also kind of, when I'm thinking about gun control, I'm thinking about, it kind of matters where you are.
Why is it that, why concealed? Oh, if I were of the mind to carry a weapon for, as crime deterrence, I would want the guy to know I had it. So why don't we just, what if everybody, if we're going to assume, you know, the point of concealed carry is to assume that everybody's walking around strapped all the time, why don't we have people walking around strapped all the time, visibly?
Some people would be totally okay with that.
Yep.
It's called Texas.
Yep.
Well, you know, I think that the struggle for me, or not, I wouldn't say for me, I think for everyone, should be that statistically when you have a gun, it's more likely to be used against you or someone you love than it is to save you. And statistically, an untrained civilian in any kind of mass shooter situation is statistically more likely to shoot anyone other than the actual person that they intend to shoot. Statistics are not in favor of everyone having a gun actually makes you safer. It's all psychology. So I don't feel safer by adding more guns into the mix because that's just statistically increasing the chances of a large number of more people getting shot.
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Don't quote me on this because this is from the 90s. I only remember hearing about it. It was before the internet was a thing. So we could Google it right now if we wanted to. But I do recall that there was a county or city in Arizona. So it makes sense to be in Arizona or New Mexico or something like that, where everybody in the town was required to have a weapon. And the crime rate was almost zero because everybody knew that everybody had a gun. I'm like, that to me is a deterrent. If I knew everybody had a gun, but when you come to the open carry thing, because Michigan is an open carry state, they've done all these psychological tests where like a white guy will walk down the street and the cops will show up and be like, hey, what do you got this gun for? Oh, you know, no, I'm not going to violate your rights. I know you got it, but you know, you're making some people uncomfortable. It's cool. But, you know, maybe it's not the wisest thing to do. And this is cops talking to people, right?
Yeah, but
then you got a black guy who does the same thing, and the cops show up, and, you know, they're racing around the corner, and the guy's got his gun drawn, put it down. Guy's just open carrying, but happens to be black, finger down on the trigger.
Open carry doesn't apply to people.
No, it doesn't apply to people. I mean, at least in these experiments that are attempting to show something. But I assume if that black guy was walking with a large group of white people, it would be fine. But if it was a bunch of black people walking with guns, it would not be acceptable.
Or, I mean,
such as with the Black Panthers.
Cases,
and
you could announce that you have your gun.
Say again?
Just in some cases, like with, you know, you could announce that you have your gun to make sure that law enforcement knows. You're like, hey, I have it. It's legal. I have a permit.
It's cool. And then they shoot you.
Yeah, they'll still shoot you to
death. They'll shoot you to death.
You don't have to have a gun. You just have to look like you're reaching for something. In a state where it's legal for you to have a gun, but they'll shoot you. So having a gun certainly doesn't make those people any safer.
As a black person, I agree with you. I also wonder if in a situation, and this is where I guess I agree with Malcolm X more than Martin Luther King, right? Malcolm X, and I'm going to bastardize his statement, but he said, hey, you know, work with as many people as will work with you. Walk hand in hand with as many people as you can walk hand in hand with. But if someone puts their hands on you, you put them in the ground, right? And so in a situation where we know that there are the bad apple police officers, so I guess we're back at the police officer thing. There are people who do want to harm you who are in law enforcement. There are people who just want to harm you basically in the normal culture. Knowing that cops shoot people, shoot law-abiding citizens, shoot unarmed law-abiding citizens, I almost feel like having a gun might be a good idea to shoot back.
I don't disagree with why you would feel that way, but unfortunately, it's like the same. I have a friend who is, he has a unique stance on guns. He's crazy, crazy liberal.
Mm-hmm.
Loves guns, though. Loves, loves, loves guns.
I love guns.
He is anti-government, more anarchist, like, you're not taking me down. And I get all that. But from a complete realist standpoint, not from like the natural humanistic desire to defend myself and to feel like I have the means to defend myself. In a real world scenario, you may have your stockpile of guns, but when the government comes for you, they're taking you out.
Right, they've got more guns.
I mean, that's just, exactly. So while you may have a gun to defend yourself in some of these situations, law enforcement can still take you out anyway. And even if you manage to protect yourself from the one law officer who is maybe going to shoot you, the rest of the system's coming for you after that.
It's kind of interesting. So I'm moving to this area called Roseville, right? And in Roseville, people in southeastern Michigan also refer to it as Roachville. And so I'm like, I got to make this house nice because I'm living in an area that I don't want to live in. And this is someone who's moved out of Detroit. Mm-hmm. Like, actually a nice area of Detroit, but still moved out of Detroit. And most people have this view of Detroit like, oh my God, you know, were you strapped? And the answer is yes. But no, so I don't actually own a gun. But the first day we got there, my wife and I were starting to clean up. We're starting to paint. And this, our neighbor shows up and he pulls up on his motorcycle, and the motorcycle has a Confederate flag flying on the background, back of it. And I'm like, oh God, lovely. I need to invest in some Black Lives Matter signs right now for the front yard. But he comes over after a while. You know, I'm playing some music that's along. It's this band called Third Day, like a Christian version of Lynyrd Skynyrd, right?
Very aware.
And so I'm playing this, and the windows are open, and they're fine with it. And then I throw on some hip hop. It's Christian hip hop too. And the guy's like, nobody wants to fucking hear that. I'm like, okay, great. So I play like your country style music, then I play this music, and you're like, nobody wants to hear that. But then he comes over, and he starts rattling off, we live next door to you. We're kind of assholes. We rev our engines. We're kind of rednecks. We don't mean any harm or anything, but this house down on the corner, just so you know, there were some shootings down there. So you guys got guns, right? Because you're going to need some guns. And, I said to him, we're pretty good. We're taken care of. We're good, right? And we don't have any guns, and I don't want to have any guns in my home. But I do love guns. I love to go to the range with my buddy Rob and shoot guns all the time. But I felt like he was coming from this place. I feel like we're going to the white privilege episode. I feel like he was coming from this place of privilege when he's talking about all the guns that he owns to protect himself. I'm like, if I have a gun to protect myself, the way that narrative is going to play out on the news is dude barricades himself in house, cops show up, whatever. Right. I'm the bad guy, even though I'm a law-abiding citizen who has every right to own a gun.
Now, I've got a gun right now. Now, that may or may not be true, but I think I'll be able to talk whenever I want on the show.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could.
I could.
I was like, wait, do you? No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. But, I mean, the
better be sure.
I can't imagine you with a gun, Kent. I can't.
I have been to...
I think I'd be mildly surprised.
I have been to the firing range where you can rent them by the half hour, maybe 4 times in my life. That was enough.
Okay.
I'm good.
I love it. But my buddy always gets like different kinds of guns. He's like, all right, this gun can shoot even further. I'm like, I feel like I'm in a sniper movie. This is like super cool. And I was like 700 yards away and I hit that thing.
This was all at the range?
Yeah.
So the problem with this gun can shoot even further is they're all going to explode against that concrete wall in the back. I mean.
Yeah, but when that wall is further back than the last wall you shot at, that's really cool.
What range are you in that it's like many, many football fields long?
There's some outdoor ones up in Sterling Heights.
Yeah. Outdoor.
I mean,
okay.
there are indoor ones as well, but then there are outdoor ones as well. And so you go out and you just, okay, this wall's 300 yards away. Okay, this one's 900 yards away. It's like, oh my God, it's 3 football fields? I mean, it's like 9 football fields?
900 yards?
Yeah. Dude has like sniper rifles. So,
and this is like a professional facility or is just a piece of land?
Professional facilities, but it is also a piece of land.
900 yards.
I may be exaggerating.
A half a mile.
Oh yeah, you could definitely shoot a bullet a half a mile. Easy.
Sure.
Easy.
Sure, but who owns a piece of, I mean, in like Sterling Heights, who owns a property that's a half a mile long?
I believe there's one up on 18 and a half in Ryan.
Sure.
Don't quote me on that.
Great.
It's a little
half
further
miles
than
a long
that.
Way.
It's a long way. But either way, and it shoots into a hill, right? So, I mean, there's a bluff at the end of it. But anyway.
Sorry, Grasshopper.
I think we've gotten enough out of that.
Sure.
Out of that. And we're at an hour, so let's take a 10-minute break.
You know, there was one thing I did want to mention.
Oh, wait. Is it Hamilton?
No. In fact, it is not.
Oh, that's shocking.
There's one thing I wanted to mention about one other thing that Malcolm X said.
Our forefathers weren't the pilgrims. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. The rock was landed on us.
You see? I always
You always mess it up.
I always bring that up when Malcolm X comes up. And I just now realized, because I went into that clip blind, that that the Denzel version of that quote is a misquote.
It is totally a misquote.
Yeah, I didn't realize.
It's interesting.
Okay.
But anyway, so we're going to take a 10-minute break. We'll be back. Well, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for waiting on the line
for
us.
Can I ever bring it back?
You should.
Can
you have brought it back in the past. I had to do it one time.
You asked me to do it one time.
Well, if you want to do it. Hey, Kelly, you want to bring us back?
Okay, boys.
Kelly, you want to bring us back in?
I'm staying out of this.
Okay. All right. Kent, bring it back in.
No, you do it.
You know what? You're an asshole. Asshat. Anyhow.
Welcome back.
Yeah. Oh, fine. We're back. Okay. So on... Jesus. On the break, we started talking about something interesting. I want Kelly to kind of bring this up because I think it was her story.
What?
And she's eating some crunchy Cheetos.
No,
so
I'm
she's
done.
Oh,
I'm
she's
not,
done, but she's got the orange
done.
Fingers.
Yeah,
and the funny thing is, her fingers match her hair right now.
Hey, don't talk about my fingers on air.
And the odd complexion of the President of the United States.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Thank
don't,
God
please,
that's
don't. Like, don't.
That's
no.
where you were going. Yeah, your head no. looks just like Donald Trump.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Your hair is very presidential
no,
right now.
Yeah, well,
oh, my God.
His is more blonde lately. It's very strangely blonde.
Anyhow, so.
Moving on. So during the break, Kent yep. and I were skimming through our Facebook feeds.
Was I?
And this has not popped up in my feeds, and I feel like I'm pretty
yeah.
liberal. So
oh,
Facebook
I saw
needs
it on
to
Twitter.
Get. Facebook needs to get on this algorithm.
Well, let me. I'm gonna actually just read the post that came with it. So this is a post from Robert Reich. For those of you who don't know who he is,
Robert
he is
B. Reich.
Yes, he is a former Secretary of Labor under
Bill
President
Clinton.
Bill Clinton.
Yes. And he is, by the way, and this is absolutely not a negative, but it is notable about him. He is 4'10".
Yes, he is. Short.
Oh my
yes.
gosh.
Yes.
Well, aren't you 4'10"?
I'm 4'11".
Oh, wow. You would look down on this guy.
Right.
Yeah. But he would definitely look up to that parking meter in Royal Oak, wouldn't he?
He is a brilliant economist, by the way. So just to lay that out there.
Okay.
Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson said this week that poverty is largely a state of mind. Mr. Carson said, "You take somebody that has the right mindset, you take everything from them and put them on the street, and I guarantee in a little while they'll be right back up there. And you take somebody with the wrong mindset, you can give them everything in the world, they'll work their way right back down to the bottom." Mr. Reich says, "Well, that's comforting. So out of the 1 out of 5 of our nation's children now in poverty just need better attitudes, and they'll have food in their stomachs, roofs over their heads, and warm clothing. What do you think?"
I don't think that was what Ben Carson said. Now, you know, and we kind of got into this, and but I want to repeat some of what was said in our offline conversation. I disagree with Ben Carson politically on a lot of things, right? And I think we'll get into that. But I don't disagree necessarily with this statement because, and while it might be a bit overarching, I have met people who have an impoverished state of mind, right? They have this mindset that thinks poor. And I hate to use this example, but like people who win the lottery, they continue to have habits that are developed from when they were poor. These are the habits of people who do not have money. People who didn't have money and all of a sudden have money contractually, like basketball players. I had Dick DeVos, who is Betsy DeVos's father. Okay,
husband.
So, say again?
Husband.
No, father.
Well,
the elder.
Well, then that would be Dick DeVos's father because Betsy DeVos married into the name.
Yes. His name is also Dick DeVos Sr.
But it's not her father. because
father-in-law. Sorry.
Okay.
Father-in-law. Okay. Okay, my bad.
Richard DeVos.
Okay, so Richard DeVos. So Richard DeVos came into a class that I was taking when I was in college. And so Dick DeVos, Amway, or Richard DeVos, Amway owns the Orlando Magic. He came into our class. He spoke for a little bit. I believe he was worth like $3 billion at
That's
the time
he was
speaking in our class. So more money than I will ever see in my life. But I remember I'm losing my train of thought. We were talking about this impoverished state. So he was talking about when one of the basketball players came onto his team, and the person who had taken care of him all the way through high school, when he was prospecting for colleges, when he got into colleges, managed his career while he was in college, managed his career while he started dealing with these agents to get him on the right basketball team, and then still wanted to manage his basketball career. Okay. Wanted to manage his money, wanted to manage his household, all these kinds of things. And Richard DeVos sat down this basketball player, Dwight Howard. It was Dwight Howard. Sorry,
oh, okay.
Dwight Howard, when he was on the Orlando Magic. So I don't know where he is now.
Last I heard it was Houston.
Okay. So it was when Dwight Howard was on the Orlando Magic, and he said, no, it was his mom or cousin or something like that. They're not going to be over your books anymore. They're not going to be over your finances because you're dealing with more money than this person has ever dealt with. They have no idea what they're doing at this point. Their thinking is not at this particular kind of level. And I know that that's not what Ben Carson is saying, but what I kind of took away from that conversation is there is a difference in how a group that understands and sees money or sees numbers or whatever thinks, and those who feel like they're never going to have anything or never be anything and never be able to get beyond their particular station in life. And there are people who will never be able to get to another station in life because of an invisible caste system that we have here in the United States. I believe that that exists. But I do believe that there is something to this statement of people moving beyond a station in life and continuing to have an impoverished state of mind. So that basketball player wisely decided to have people who worked with that kind of money deal with his money. People who had a different set of thinking to deal with the kind of thinking that he now had to do at this point in his life. I do feel like there are people who have nothing but refuse to think as if they have nothing, and they are able to move beyond that. And I believe that there are people who have nothing, regardless of how they had nothing. There can be a total system set against them, and they accept that this is all they will ever have, this is all they will ever be, and they never move beyond that. I do believe that because I have seen that. I have seen that. And I don't think that you can just name it and claim it and will yourself out of poverty, but I do believe that those who do not accept poverty as all that they are ever going to have, I think that those people have a better chance of getting out than those who just accept this
but
as the reality
they're
going to have.
But the difference between what you're saying and what Ben Carson is saying is you're talking about a better chance. Ben Carson wasn't talking about chances. He said he guaranteed it. That if you take the person with the right mindset, you take everything away from them, he guarantees that in a short while, they will be back.
Sure. I mean,
so basically,
I would take the implication as
if you're smart enough, you will figure it out.
I feel like I'm an apologist for this guy right now, but I feel like he's speaking hyperbolically. There's no way that a guy who's a smart neurosurgeon as this guy is thinks that everybody who just thinks great is automatically going to be pulled out of poverty. I don't think that anybody literally thinks,
I guarantee it. I think he might literally think that.
I don't think he has a stamp in his office that says guaranteed to get out
of
poverty.
He doesn't believe in public
health.
He doesn't believe that any of the programs that helped him succeed should continue to exist. So he obviously either therefore doesn't think other people deserve the chances that he deserves, or he actually believes that he got to where he is without all of those things that helped
and
him.
And that is where I would say to focus the ire, not necessarily on this idea, because I think because I've seen this idea, I can't disagree with it,
but
wanting to eliminate the programs
that
helped you get out of something and then...
You're rejecting what I'm saying is that his idea is a guarantee that everyone who's smart enough will get there. You're saying that's not what you think he's saying. I'm saying based on everything that we know about him, that is what he's saying, because that seems to be what he believes, because that's what he encompasses in every possible way.
I will say this... I would prefer that he were president. And I only say that because of this. The list of people that I would prefer were president is approximately 319.5 million names long. not all of them are constitutionally eligible, but he's on it somewhere.
Here's a crazy thing.
Yeah.
Like, I love the hyperbole there. But I'm also like, I don't want my neighbor to be president.
What, you want what?
I said, I don't want my neighbor to be president.
Oh,
like,
I don't.
I'll take a Donald Trump over my neighbor.
Oh, I would take your neighbor blind. I would take your neighbor blind over Donald Trump.
That would lead to way more problems than you probably think.
No.
We would have already bombed North Korea at this point. Yeah, that would have happened already, just so you're aware.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I might have to amend that. But speaking of, I just wanted to go over, because I have a list of
You're not going to read that whole list, are you?
Oh, I have a list. It's 319.5 million items long. Buckle up. No, I just some things that have happened in the last 15 days in our country. And I just wanted to go over some of them and see if anything has traction. The president of the United States asked the director of the FBI to make an investigation of the now former security advisor go away. When that was refused, he then fired the director of the FBI, who was leading an investigation into the former national security advisor and into the campaign. On grounds that the campaign had behaved in a way that could only be described as treason. The president approached the directors of the CIA and NSA and asked them to make their investigations go away. He went on an overseas trip where he took part in a satanic ritual with the king of Saudi Arabia involving a glowing orb that I am convinced is a hellmouth.
See, I liked the reference more to Lord of the Rings.
Sure. Whatever works for you.
It was not a satanic ritual for those of you taking this literally.
And for the first time, it has come into stark relief that he appears to be, not to be gossipy, on the outs with his wife, who every single time she gets...
About that video? She spotted his hand.
Oh my
she
gosh.
Bitch slaps his hand every
yeah.
single time.
That was fun. That was fun.
So
I was like, wow, what happened? Maybe they had a fight.
So things are bad.
Again.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, so Donald Trump's...
Who? Oh, okay.
Donald Trump's budget came out today. All right. And
I was wondering if that was going to make the list.
Yeah, it's made the list. And so Betsy DeVos was on Capitol Hill today. Not a lot of fireworks. Not as much as when she was going through her confirmation. But what she's overseeing, of course, his proposal in terms of the Department of Education has kind of drawn some pretty sharp criticism from both educators and from lawmakers, of course, because it calls for $1.4 billion to expand school choice. And we talked about this a few weeks ago when we had an episode about education. And so when we talked about school choice, we talked about a few weeks ago, vouchers, charter schools, that kind of thing. Not that some charter schools are not attached to public school systems, but here's the thing. Okay, so $1.4 billion to expand school choice because, and here's the kicker, they are slashing $10.6 billion, all right?
Dollars. American dollars.
Yes. For after-school programs, teacher training, and federal student loans and grants. They are getting rid of the... public service forgiveness program. So a lot of people were going into getting education degrees, going, you know, getting all the student debt, getting education degrees, going off and teaching in an impoverished neighborhood and getting their student loans forgiven after, I believe, 10 years of service in a public school district. And so they're getting rid of that program. They're getting rid of after school programs where a lot of students, a lot of parents kind of depend on a little bit of extra time because now I can work till 5 instead of having to pick up my kid up at 3, or your kid can go home at 3, but now you got to pay a babysitter, or they're on their own from 3 to 5 or whatever. I mean, but when I was 9, I was watching myself, so it's not a big deal. But
I do think it's important to put an asterisk on all of this, which is terrible. But and at the bottom of the page, the asterisk would say none of this is going to happen. None of this is real. I mean, it's in the president's budget.
It's in his budget.
It's in his budget.
You don't think this is going to be approved?
Budgets do not budget. Presidential budgets never, rarely, if ever, get voted on, much less approved.
Even when you have a majority,
that's not going to get approved.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, who would approve it?
I will buy you a medium popcorn the next time we go to the movies. If I'm wrong.
Oh. Okay. Wait, are you going to buy me a small popcorn, but you're part of that AMC program and you're going to get a medium anyway?
How I get the medium popcorn is really none of your business.
So,
well, I hope you're right.
Wait, I don't understand. Why wouldn't we have a budget? We always have a budget that we're working with. So some budget gets approved, right? We're not just going by the seat of our pants.
In this particular case, we haven't actually had a budget in many, many years. The government has been funded on a series of what you call continuing resolutions. We haven't had a budget passed. I don't think maybe in all of Obama's presidency.
So what are these whole, we avoided a government shutdown?
Yeah. We fund the government with a continuing resolution, which is kind of like when a union, to avoid a union, this is just an analogy, this to keep a union from striking, sometimes they will say, here's an agreement to work without a contract until such and such a date while negotiations are going on under the terms of the old contract. So the government has been funded for the better part of a decade with continuing resolutions.
So what was the last budget that was passed that is basically what this continuing resolution is allowing?
I believe Eisenhower was president. No, I think it was George W. Bush passed a budget.
Okay.
Maybe Obama passed a budget, but I doubt it.
So that was the last president and the president before.
Right. So what they do is we say we're going to fund the government through – like right now we have the government funded through – I believe it's October.
Okay.
And then on such and such a date in October, the government will run out of money and they will have to either pass another continuing resolution or a budget, which probably isn't going to happen, but they will have to pass another continuing resolution or have a government shutdown. So with a couple weeks left to go in the continuing resolution, you will start to see the Republicans demand shutting down various aspects of the Obamacare and completely defunding Planned Parenthood and a number of items on their list. The Democrats will respond by going, okay, you're running the federal government. Go ahead and shut it down. And then the Republicans will fold and we'll get funded for another 7 months.
It does seem like, and regardless of who's in control, that we do just kind of have this kind of circular thing going on, and not a lot really happens actually on either end.
I had no idea that this was how things worked.
Oh yeah.
I mean, to be fair, neither party really gets a whole lot done.
Not lately.
Was it? I mean, obviously this is fiction, but one of the great things about Aaron Sorkin's fiction is it always tended to play in the sandbox of reality for the most part. And so I believe that you were the one who talked about a West Wing episode when they asked, do you know how long you have to change anything in Washington? And it's 9 months.
9 months.
Because of all the elections that happen, you know, midterm elections, you know, turnover. How long does an administration actually have to change anything in the 4 years that someone is president? You have 9 months to actually get stuff done.
Well, a president has 9 months to get stuff done because after about 9, maybe 10 months, Congress is running for re-election because it happens every 2 years. And so Congress is running for re-election and they're not going to do anything controversial. So then the midterms happens, and then after the midterms, the president's running for re-election. So he's not going to do anything controversial. And then that's it. Oh, and then if a president gets re-elected, he's kind of a lame duck. He might get a few months, but that's it.
Okay. So here's some other things. Okay, so we talked about the budget coming out. I pulled up this news story from NBC News. It's from a couple days ago, May 23rd. Oh, so yesterday, May 23rd at the time of recording. Donald Trump's budget breaks these 7 campaign promises. Now, I'm pretty used to him breaking campaign promises at this time.
Are we supposed to be shocked?
No, we're not supposed to be shocked at all. But anyway, here's some specifics, though, because a lot of people have conversations like, oh, man, he broke all these promises to you. Like, what promises did he break? Well, you know. Okay, well, here are some actual 7 specific promises that he's broken. Broken promise number 1, Trump vowed not to cut Medicaid. As a matter of fact, that was one of the first things he said he put out on Twitter. He's like, I said I'd never cut Medicaid, right? That was, I mean, you can find that on Twitter.
Plus, I was the first one to say no Medicaid or Medicare cuts. Huckabee copied me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said that. Trump's budget would cut Medicaid by a lot, despite the president telling the Daily Signal days before launching his White House bid, I'm not going to cut Social Security like every other Republican, and I'm not going to cut Medicare or Medicaid. So you got that. Broken promise number 2, Trump said he wouldn't cut Social Security. Trump's budget proposes slashing the Social Security Disability Insurance, SSDI, a $31.4 billion change to the program that pays monthly benefits to over 10 million disabled individuals under the retirement age. What else did he do? Broken promise number 3, Trump said he'd fully fund the border wall. I don't think I need to go into too much detail about the fact that we're not going to fully fund that wall. Promise number 4. Trump promised to cancel all federal funding to sanctuary cities. This is another contract promise. Trump's administration has tried to restrict funding to so-called sanctuary cities, jurisdictions that don't enforce federal immigration priorities and cooperate fully with federal authorities. Budget doesn't include any kind of limit on federal funding for that. So I think in a sense that's a good thing. That's a win for Democrats, right? Broken promise number 5, Trump said he would increase funding for treatment of PTSD. It would increase funding for the Department of Veterans Affairs, but the budget proposal doesn't appear to focus money on PTSD or mental health issues. Number 6, Trump told police union leaders he'd find more funding for training. Did not find that money whatsoever. There's no language in any of the budget for that. And the last promise broken, Trump promised to bring down the debt fairly quickly. I think that's something that's a forgivable one, because I think every president says something along those lines, or every candidate says something along those lines. We're going to bring down the debt pretty quickly. And then they get in there and they find out this is not like budgeting for my own house. This is budgeting an entire nation. So a little bit different, but still 7 campaign promises. I'll give him a mulligan on one of those. So I'll say at least 6 campaign promises broken amidst many.
Well,
others.
And let me throw this out there. Any Republican who claims they're going to cut the debt while cutting taxes, know for sure that that can't happen. Because when you cut taxes, you're cutting your income. So it's the equivalent of getting demoted at work and getting a lower paycheck and then saying, I'm going to spend more. If you have less money, you cannot cut down the debt.
Oh, but Kelly,
put it on credit.
Right, which then, of course, increases your debt.
Lower
so you
taxes.
Cannot do that.
Tax cuts lead to increased economic growth, which means more revenues into the government. And this succeeds each and every wait, no, 0% of the time it's been tried. It has never worked.
Well, but that even you are absolutely correct. But again, stimulated economic growth would not necessarily go back into the government if you are, in fact, cutting taxes.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement.
So.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, you know, again, not saying that, you know, Democrats are known for wanting to increase programs and whatnot, but I'm just saying it is impossible to make headway on the debt while cutting taxes.
In general, what it comes down to, and this is bigger than the debt, it's bigger than it. In general, you probably shouldn't depend. Okay, when looking for a way to fix government, you shouldn't depend on the people who say that they hate it to fix
I'm
it.
I'm not going
to
disagree with you on that.
Well, if they say they hate it, do they hate it because they think it's broken, or do they hate it because they don't think it should exist? Because if you hate it because you think it's broken, trying to fix it might make the most sense. Like, I hate government the way that it is. Let's fix this.
Those are Democrats.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But they're part of the government.
Sure.
I think the point that
this is where it's always a little strange for me, is because, again, I mean, Kelly, actually all 3 of us were raised fairly conservative,
mm-hmm.
fairly Republican. We've all voted Republican at some point in time. Now we're
Not proud of
generally
it.
Generally more. I'm not proud of the fact that I voted for Bush twice. I'm not. Okay, I did it in good conscience. I was at a certain point in life. I agreed with his policies. So when I think about Democrats and Republicans, just because I'm a Democrat doesn't mean that I believe that that Republicans want to burn the whole ship to the ground. I mean, I was a Republican for a very long time, and I never felt that I wanted to burn the whole ship to the ground.
It's not about them wanting to burn it to the ground. It's just you have to look at what their actual policies are. A lot of their actual policies believe that they don't believe the government should be doing any of the things in which we're paying them to do. So, like, Ben Carson doesn't believe that the very department that he's running really serves much of a purpose, because he doesn't believe that it is, in fact, the government's role to be assisting citizens with their housing needs.
Right. And
similarly to the guy who runs, you know, the EPA.
And therein's a problem. This is where my conservative underpinnings, my background is going to come in. It's like, okay, so maybe we need to have a larger conversation. We did this a few weeks ago on our education episode Kevin Briskey asked the question, as a libertarian would ask, should a federal Department of Education exist? Okay, it's only been around since 1979, so it's 37 years old, and we all made the joke, oh, you know, we just assume that it's been around since 1776. Like, all these departments are just always necessary. And I think for someone to say, I don't think that the government should be involved in this, and I don't think that this department should necessarily be around, but since it is, it does need someone to run it efficiently, I don't think that it's unfair to think that certain things, that the government shouldn't be involved in certain things. Because what you're doing is the opposite assumption. So you're like, okay, they have this assumption that it's not necessary. Well, you're making the assumption that it is. What needs to happen is a conversation as to why it's not necessary and why it is necessary before we talk about,
right,
okay, what are we going to do since it is here?
There aren't many actual government functions that conservatives by and large believe are necessary.
Military industrial complex, that's going anywhere.
That's about it.
That's not going anywhere.
But libertarians don't agree with that. Well, some.
Well, I mean, it's not like, hey, Republicans are like, hey, you know what? Department of Education, we're not fans of the Department of Education, or we're not fans of education. They don't say that, right? They're not fans. It's not like they're
what
not fans of.
What department, apart from the military, are they fans of?
I'm not sure, just because we just jumped into a conversation I wasn't planning on having.
Well, right, but I'm saying pretty affirmatively that in general the conservative philosophy as of today, not that it's always been this way,
right,
because the conservatives have moved far to the right. You know, like, we've moved in different directions. Mm-hmm. So what's, you know, conservative now looks different than what was conservative a couple of decades ago. But as of today, by and large, the conservative agenda is to be anti almost all government operations. Apart from the military, do you know of any government operations that conservatives by and large think are necessary and want to expand, apart from the military and wall building? Mass deportation.
Sure.
They want to increase that.
So
Homeland
ICE.
Security, state. Although, not really. I mean, you know, a lot of foreign policy stuff, a lot of security.
They want to
military.
Be isolationists with a yeah. giant military.
Okay, so then make the case for, I mean, this is what I would tell anybody, make the case for this department that you believe should exist.
No, what we need to do is make the case for government at all, with the exception of military.
I don't think you should make a case for government. We know that a government is necessary because our country doesn't exist without it. Right? That's
no,
what we started
I mean,
with.
But that's what I'm saying is if the military is the only thing you believe the government is necessary for, we don't need a democracy for that.
I don't think that anybody
believes.
And
we don't need a Congress for that.
I don't think the people who are working in government think that the only thing that is necessary is the military. I think that that's false to put that out there.
What the people in government think, we don't actually know, because it's all about.
I think that's unfair to say as well, because
agenda.
The bill that came out today about the guns, I mean, it's literally on the internet where I can go and look and read the language. It's a headache. I think they bank on the fact that people aren't going to, but it's not that we don't have access to it. We have access to what our lawmakers are doing. Unless it's like a backroom deal that's,
we,
you know, secret handshakes.
To a lot of their guiding principles, because in general, most of them, you know, what they say versus what they end up doing are not always the same thing. And
yeah, but you're telling me what Republicans believe and what Democrats believe, so we have an idea of what they believe at the, at
I'm,
the core.
I'm saying in general, conservative philosophy, as of right now, is anti the vast majority of government operations.
Okay.
So it, I.
And you're for the vast majority of government operations.
Well, I mean, in that case, then really somebody needs to take a very, like several months, I would say, of like a political history class to find out how did, after centuries and centuries of human society, did we get to where we got? Because I, the way I see it is a bunch of spoiled brats who are taking everything that's been handed to them, generations and generations of humans learning and getting to places where we have lots of things that we didn't used to have before. And we go, we don't need any of that. You want to know why? Because none of us actually know what it was like before. That's what I think.
Well, to a degree, but the assumption is...
Let's go back to when there wasn't school. When there wasn't government-created schools. Go back to that. When the vast majority of people weren't educated.
Okay, so you're telling me that you believe that before the inception of the Department of Education that we had a vastly undereducated people in the United States. Because that's just not true.
I mean, take it. I mean, probably like half a century before. Yeah, we did.
I mean, we're more
kids didn't go to school. Like
our country is more illiterate in the last 30 years than it has been in its entire history.
I mean, things only got really good for a short period.
Yeah,
of
absolutely,
time.
Absolutely, absolutely more illiterate.
I hear that the average IQ creeps up 2 points every 5 years.
The IQ might go up.
Yeah,
the literacy rate has gone down. You can be smart and not be able to read.
Are you not among the people I know. What do you think the literacy rate was in 1900?
I don't know. Let's Google that.
Let's Google it.
Literacy rate in 1900. Literacy?
Calvin's on it. We don't all have to Google it.
Okay. 19th century and early 20th century, illiteracy was very common. In 1870, 20% of the entire adult population was illiterate, and 80% of the black population was illiterate. By 1900, the situation had improved somewhat, but still 44% of blacks remained illiterate. National Assessment of Adult Literacy, 120 years of literacy. That's just a quick Google.
Yeah, adult literacy is still a problem. It's definitely still a problem, but I'm saying that before we had government involved in a lot of these different various departments, you were on your own. And being on your own has not turned out very well for a large percentage of people throughout human history.
I don't know if things were necessarily you were on your own. I think that things were left to states more often. And I think that's what people are saying when you get rid of a particular department, like Department of Education. We got rid of it. That would mean that the states wouldn't
be
over education.
You can argue the difference between state government versus national government. You can argue that. But I would say in general.
No, I'm saying if you got rid of certain departments, I don't think that the issue would just go away. It would be now taken care of by states.
But what I'm
saying
is, in general,
should the state decide to take care of that?
Conservative philosophy, while they might argue that they don't want the national government involved, they don't actually really want the state government involved either.
Because the state government, why have the state involved when you can do things on a county level? And the county level is a little big if we want to do it city by city. The smaller and more local the government, the better, to the point that the government is too weak to do anything.
Is that bad?
Well, yes.
I guess that's what I'm saying is prior to any government beyond your little count, you know, city council meeting in a church or whatever it was that you used to do, unless you were rich, your kids didn't go to school. If you are a minority, you certainly didn't go to school. You may, in fact, have been, you know, not had really much of anything.
I mean, if you were a minority, you still went to school.
I guess it depends on how far back we're going.
You know, your education. I mean, we were still educated. I mean, it's just a matter of this idea.
I'm not saying that not being educated. I'm not saying stupid. I'm saying
not
able to actually physically go to a school.
No, I would say that black people did go to schools. We had our own school houses.
They were separate, but equal, right? Well, that's
fine.
I mean, there were certain grade levels that they stopped at. The quality was extremely low. And many kids still didn't get to go to school because it was really up to your parents at that point whether or not, you know,
but
if you
also had a very
family
we were,
needed you to
we
be
were
at
also
home.
More agrarian. So, as you moved into a more urban background, and you had the end of World War II with this surplus of money and the invention of the American teenager. That didn't exist before 1950. Teenagers didn't exist. The age existed, but this holding pattern between childhood and adulthood didn't. Okay, so when you're talking about an invention of something that's, what, 70 years old at this point, that time period in life, 17 years old, we were also very agrarian. So school ended eighth grade. Unless you had money and
right.
you go into college, right?
I mean,
eighth grade, because why?
Labor laws,
you would stop and go work.
You didn't necessarily go to school because you went to work.
Yeah, you went to work on mom and dad's farm. We were agrarian. We lived off the land back then. Now we don't. People have moved into suburbs and people have moved into cities. So you would have to, I mean, if you got rid of the Department of Education and you got rid of state education and you went down to the county level of education, you would still have to get rid of cities and suburbs in order to go back to what you're talking about.
But what I think what you're missing is that once you break it down to that level, people's access gets even lower than it already is.
I don't think that you're incorrect about access. I think that you are absolutely correct about access. But I do think that a lot of dominoes would have to fall to get to like this total implosion that you're suggesting.
There are lots of people who already want it now.
I'm sure there are people who want it now, but I don't think that anybody wants it for us to be the most uneducated people on the face of the planet.
But if we
not,
were...
not people like me, but if all those kids in Detroit, if we could leave it up to certain types of people, every school in Detroit would have closed by now.
If we were the most uneducated nation on Earth, would that be as bad as the Armenian genocide?
Really? You're going to do that? I should call Kara.
Wouldn't
right
be
now.
The first one.
I'm going to call Kara right now and be like, hey, we just made another Armenian genocide
I
joke.
Wouldn't be the first one.
How are you
to,
feeling? Okay.
To minimize the Armenian genocide.
All right. Good conversation. Who's got another story?
I have a story about Donald Trump's budget, but it's a different... It's a different and shorter story because this has nothing to do with budgeting priorities.
I'm surprised we haven't talked about the FBI at all.
Oh, we're coming to it. This is not about budgeting priorities. This is about accounting fraud.
I think I know where this is going.
So
I don't know. Your feeds must be totally different than mine.
So it's
I may not be as liberal as I think.
So here's the deal.
I'm not going to argue with you on that.
The administration says that its new proposal will erase the budget deficit after 10 years. However, to get there, it assumes that its policies, basically tax cuts and deregulation, will send economic growth surging to 3% per year, allowing the government to collect $2 trillion in new tax revenue.
While taxes.
So this can't happen. It 3% growth is considered a pipe dream that is mathematically impossible. But this is more or less standard thinking about tax cuts these days.
Okay.
Which was what we were kind of getting at before.
It's the next step in the administration's arithmetic that would be more of the less magical thinking and more straightforward fraud. Or a hilarious madcap mistake, depending on how you interpret it. So the budget mentions the tax cuts, but doesn't include any of their costs. It just states that they will be deficit neutral, thanks to their economic benefits. The Treasury Secretary says that the tax cuts will pay for themselves in increased economic growth. So what we were talking about before. So the White House is relying on the tax cuts to pay for themselves and add $2 trillion to government revenue. So they're counting the $2 trillion two separate times.
Here's a question. Does the White House – So I went on a tour of the White House, and they have all these really cool rooms. But I'm assuming that there were plenty of rooms that I didn't get to see. In the way, I didn't get to see the Oval Office.
Called
right?
The residence.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a lot of rooms that you don't get to see. And then there's, of course, like the secret tunnels underneath the
bunker.
The
Situation Room, yeah.
I'm wondering, is there a room in the White House where there is a person with like this spindle and a bunch of straw off to the side? And he's just spinning straw into gold to make this happen, because I don't know how it's going to happen.
I need me gold. What's my name? Okay.
And I think that there are like, you know, economists on staff, and there is like the White House Budget Committee, correct? And
we would need to agree on a definition of economist.
Says,
are any of them named
whatever
Mr. Gold?
They say is fake news, or like you know, against him, or he pretty much rejected his own White House's Budget Committee report on what Trump Care was going to do.
I don't think he's very good with numbers. That's just me. Okay, so entertainment news. Entertainment news. We got like 15 minutes left.
Yep.
Kent, you got to find the story that I know is going to be the most meaningful for you.
Give me a hint.
It happened today.
What site?
Came out today.
Look, give me a site anything to look for.
This is why you always leave early, because you got a viewing party for some show you watch, okay?
I heard the Game of Thrones trailer dropped.
That's it. There it is.
Yeah, but that's not. Yeah, that's not on.
Was it the legit trailer
Wednesdays?
Or was it that?
I didn't see it. I haven't seen it yet.
I don't watch the show, so I was like, I'm not going to watch.
Some of those things have been completely.
Okay,
useless.
So anyway, I'll tell the story. Apparently, all the clans that have never met apparently are heading to Westeros,
right?
And they all are finally in this trailer together.
I would hope so, because it has been a long run.
It's kind of a big deal. So.
To give you some.
So that came out today.
Some context. We are going into. We're about to start season 7 of Game of Thrones. Season 1 was short, but in season 2, the very attractive blonde lady who was in the Terminator movie. Emilia Clarke, her character,
yes.
Daenerys Targaryen, Stormborn Targaryen, Mother of Dragons.
Because the other woman who's got the throne right now was also in
she
Terminator.
Is also a attractive blonde lady, but significantly older.
But also in Terminator.
Also, that is an odd coincidence. She was also they played the same role,
Sarah Connor,
in different iterations,
yes,
of the Terminator. I'm sure Linda Hamilton will be
what
in season 7.
Who was the one with Tom Cruise? Emilia Clarke, right, in the time travel movie.
Emily Blunt was. In
oh,
that
was Emily
time
Blunt.
Movie.
Okay, all right, all right.
But so Emilia Clarke's character. Started out on a quest to get to Westeros and retake the throne that was stolen from her family by the current ruling family in season 2. It appears as if in season 7 she's going to arrive in Westeros. That's the long. That's the long game. That is commitment.
How many weeks has it been on the show?
There's 10 episodes a season. So
yeah, but I'm like, do months or years?
Oh,
pass?
Years pass.
Okay,
years
pass.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not like this is only 7 weeks from.
No, absolutely not.
Because that's what it was on, like the show Lost. Like,
yeah,
show's been on 5 years and it's been 7 weeks. That
day
been
and
on
a
this
half.
Island. Yep. It's like, what the heck?
Uh huh.
My news story, entertainment news story, is about someone who inspires me, Jon Stewart. I was really excited because
he's going to be a guest on the show.
He is. Okay. He's Jon Stewart's coming on the show. I got him.
Yay!
Yeah, you guys don't know. I got skills. I know people who know people. No. So Jon Stewart does not know who we are. Hey, Jon. Anyhow, he was going to be doing a animation project on HBO, and unfortunately, Jon Stewart fans are going to have to wait a little bit longer because he has scrapped his TV return to HBO. Unfortunately.
Oh.
So sad news for fans of Jon Stewart, who is of course replaced by John Oliver on the Late Week Tonight.
Well, a couple things. One, last week or this week tonight is John Oliver's show, which is not the show Jon Stewart hosted.
Wait, no, Jon Stewart did
the Daily Show.
Daily Show. Okay, that's
replaced
that's
by Trevor Noah.
Trevor Noah. Yeah, my bad.
But John Oliver did work for him. He was on the Daily Show for a long time.
He was a writer on the show, right? And a correspondent.
Writer and correspondent.
Yes. Okay. Like Kelly Cleaver is a correspondent for our show.
Indeed.
I like it.
Like I can call her day of and be like, "Hey, you want to be in studio today?" And she's like, "Yeah, sure, cool, I can do that." So she was here. But continue. You were saying something.
You were telling your story.
I was done. That was it. Jon Stewart. He's not coming back to TV like we thought he was.
Yeah. Why was that? Like, why did he do it? Why did he scrap it?
According to this story, which is from USA Today, HBO and Jon Stewart have decided not to proceed with a short-form digital animated project. HBO said in a statement, "We all thought the project had great potential, but there were technical issues in terms of production and distribution that proved too difficult given the quick turnaround and topical nature of the material." So apparently it's harder to... I don't know if I believe it. There's got to be some infighting in the background.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Considering that I heard...
South Park every week is topical.
South Park is topical.
And they're animated.
Right.
So But they're excited to report that we have some future projects together, which you will be hearing about in the near future. So they have not severed ties with each other. He's going to remain with HBO for the duration of his four-year deal, which includes a first-look option for traditional TV series and films. So we're not getting the show that they've been talking about for a little while at this point.
Which honestly is fine, because it's not the show I wanted.
What do you want? You want him to come back to The Daily Show?
I want to see him five nights a week is what I want to see him.
Yes. Honestly, I think the country needs
Be it on a network?
Can you
be
imagine
on,
what his show would have been like this year? Like, can you imagine?
Yeah.
But I almost feel like maybe it must have been that for him, it was just too much.
It was. I mean,
like,
that was the thing.
I think,
when
I think he even saw it coming, and he's like, I don't have it in.
When he quit before all of those candidates were, set.
Right. Yes.
But when he left, he was saying
he was talking about the clown show before he left, right? So it was like the beginning of the primaries.
Donald Trump had declared.
Okay,
he had been a candidate for I think roughly 6 or 7 weeks when Stewart quit.
But I mean, Stewart was saying, I mean, after years and years of doing what he's doing, he said he was tired and he was sad.
Yeah.
And I mean that was hard. And I mean I experienced that somewhat doing this show every now and again. Like I realize now I was going crazy for a little while, but I also had this abscessed tooth. So apparently that can change your entire disposition. That's what my dentist said. Okay. So I was a really ornery person for a while. But I sometimes feel when we do this show, I take on a lot of the weight of some of the topics that we're talking about. So, the issue of abortion is very, very personal for me. The issue of rape culture, because I have a daughter, very, very personal for me, probably even more personal for my daughter and personal for my friends who are women, personal for my wife, obviously.
But so, since your daughter is allowed to carry a gun now, my understanding is she's in much less danger.
She's in much less danger in 4 years.
Yeah,
until then, daddy's strapped, but not really. I understand where and he's doing it on a day in day out. He was doing it on a day in day out basis. Had a much bigger team than I did, than we do here on this show. But I get it. Dealing with weighty issues every single day, and we're doing it once a week, and I'm feeling the weight of it.
Right.
So I totally understood when he walked away from it. But it seems like there are these plans for him to come back, so maybe he just needed a little break. Sometimes you got to take a break, recharge your batteries, and then come back stronger than you were before. So hopefully,
well, I do understand, because from what I have heard, and I did not hear Jon Stewart say this, but I have heard. I assume that his work day is roughly like Stephen Colbert's workday is. And I've heard that described as, he said he gets into the office at about 8:15 to 8:45, and then they tape at 6, and he leaves the theater. He leaves the theater at about 7:30. So that's a long...
Wait, what? The time didn't make any sense.
No, he gets in at 8:30 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And then they tape at 6 p.m.
Okay. Right.
And he leaves the theater at about 7:30 to go home. And when you've got kids, that's a long day.
Yeah. It's 12-hour days. any other stories? Any other entertainment?
This is why I think our feeds are different. It's like I don't have anything
entertainment-wise.
Yeah. But the closest thing I've got is the thing that I passed around earlier today on my own Facebook, which I think you, Calvin, liked.
I might have.
It was about...
I go on a liking binge for like 30 minutes.
Images of text messages about some girl who got a promotion. And
oh my gosh, yeah.
Dude texts her.
I posted that on my Facebook wall.
I'm not sexist, but here's why as a woman you shouldn't have gotten that promotion.
Ooh, I didn't see that.
Oh yeah, also, I'm going to bring that up right now.
Brilliant. But see, even the things that are entertaining to me do have like a political, social.
Oh, and she just put him on blast too.
She did. She did a freaking
awesome job. I find that I'm not sexist, but is a lot like I'm not racist, but anything that follows that is about to prove you wrong, right?
People said when somebody says that, you know what's coming.
So I posted, so here's the headline. It says, this woman got promoted ahead of her male coworker. What he did next was awful. What my comment was, shouldn't this headline read, this woman got promoted ahead of her former coworker?
Mm.
And here's why. So here's a text message. No offense, but you really don't deserve that promotion. I work my ass off, and I bring her coffee every day. You're too emotional in your decision-making. I'm not sexist, but this position really is better suited for a man. Men are better with numbers. We make better accountants. You'd be a lot more successful as a secretary. Don't get offended. I'm just being honest. Hope you don't take it the wrong way. So she responded back by saying this. See, the difference between you and me in the workplace is that while you're spending all your time sitting on your white ass, texting me shit like this, acting like you're entitled to everything in the world and waving off hard work just because you're a man, I'm, surprise, actually working hard and getting your promotions. You can say whatever you want, but at the end of the day, our male boss used your so-called superior male decision-making skills to promote me, not you. I'm sorry your genitals and skin color didn't work out in your favor this time. Maybe next promotion. Until then, your analysis report is due tomorrow. See you then.
Owned.
So former coworker, did he get fired or
she did report him to HR.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he's been fired at this point. There's no way.
I'm not sexist, but this job's better for a man. Takes a shocking lack of self-awareness.
Yeah, I know. Like, but here's the interesting thing. Like the next day or the a couple days before, certain things I don't think happen or I don't think should happen or How can people say something like that and not realize mm-hmm. what they're saying is what it is? But it was coming from another woman, a woman who was raised a conservative Christian.
Okay.
My wife is trying to sell two of this woman's properties.
Mm-hmm.
Nice lady. Great lady. Took her on a tour of Detroit. And she wants my wife, Jen, to sell one of her properties in one area. But then she felt another area was kind of bad. And so she said, I'd rather a man sell this property in this area because it's not safe for a woman to be in. And so she told me this. And I was like, what? And she's like, this happens more than you think. I was like, you hear these things happen, but you also think this is kind of a bizarro world.
There are jobs about which what that man said in that text message, there are jobs about which that is true. I'm not sexist, but this job is better suited to a man is true if we're talking about an NFL offensive lineman. But it seems to me that text message is talking between two people who work in an office.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So Okay.
Yes, at that point, I mean, I think in most cases, any kind of office scenario, you're really just measuring intelligence, not physical ability. And even in some cases with physical ability, there may be some women who are stronger than some men. There are some men who are stronger than some women.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have made it 2 hours. So unfortunately, we got to close out the show. Thanks so much for listening to Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. Make sure you check out our brand new website, I don't know if it's brand new anymore, but anyway, our website, leadingquestionsnow.com, where you can find all of our episodes from this season and last season, bios, a regular, a calendar of upcoming topics, and even suggest topics for us to talk about. If you're listening in, if you're interested in bringing our program out to your college, university, or organization, email us at hello@leadingquestionsnow.com, and we'll get back to you. To our live listeners, thanks for tuning in. To those of you listening on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or SoundCloud, thanks so much for subscribing. Please leave us a rating. And tune in next week where Kent and I have invited on a group of people to talk about fat shaming and the body positive movement. See you next week.